Matthew 13, verse 44 says, "The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought that field." That's my favorite parable of them all. I know people usually vote for the prodigal son or the good Samaritan, and those are both good, but out of all of Jesus' parables, I most like the guy who found the pirate's chest while he was working one day. Minimum wage guy out sweating in the hot sun, plowing a field, yuck. When all of a sudden the plow hits something hard, it makes a terrible noise, the engine stalls, and he thinks, great, another buried boulder, it's going to add hours to my workday. He goes and he gets his shovel and he starts digging around it, and at some point he realizes it's not a rock. It's rectangular. It's metal. It's got a lid. He opens up. Oh my goodness, it's a buried treasure chest. Oh my goodness, it's got $100 million in it, or more. Oh my goodness, oh my goodness, oh my goodness. Banks weren't very good back then. People would often bury their fortunes in fields that they owned, and then sometimes when they died, nobody knew where the money was. And it could sit there for generations. And if you happened to buy that field, and if you happened to find the buried treasure, it was seen as rightfully yours. There was a Jewish legal term for that. It was called finders, keepers, losers, weepers. And this guy discovers a buried treasure worth more than anything he could ever imagine. He looks around, nobody's nearby, so he closes the lid and he quickly, but casually, fills the hole back in. He covers it with some leaves and he keeps on plowing for the rest of the day. He finishes the shift, he punches out. On the way past the office that night, he sees the guy who owns the land that he's been working on, the guy who hired him, and he said, "You know, I've been thinking about buying some land of my own. And you seem to have, like, a lot. I wondered if you ever thought about selling any. Like, maybe..."
What does it mean?
Did I do that? I don't remember where I was. Okay, so he covers it up with some leaves, keeps on plowing, finishes shift, says, "I'd like to buy some land. Have you ever thought about selling any?" "You have. Like the piece I was plowing today?" "Oh, how much would you, like, want for that?" "Oh, it seems fair. Let me talk with my wife tonight about that. I'll get back to you." He goes running home. He empties his wallet out on the table. He dumps his wife's purse out on the table. He takes the money out of his son's dresser drawer. He smashes his daughter's piggy bank. He digs down into their couches for coins that have fallen in. Not enough. He goes, he empties out his bank account. He cashes in his IRA. He calls his brother and say, "You lousy, no good, pay me back that $50 you owe me." His family is watching. They cannot understand what is going on in this guy's mind. He's gone crazy or something. He takes his family to the car dealer and he sells the guy the car. And the wife says, "What are we going to ride home in?" And he said, "Oh, I sold the house." And they said, "Where are we going to raise the kids?" And he said, "About the kids." And she said, "No, seriously, what is going on with you?" He said, "I just need enough money to buy some land tomorrow, and then we're golden." He goes to the boss the next day, very cool. "Yeah, we talked about buying. We're still thinking about it. Are you still thinking about selling? Same price that we said? All right, that seems fair. Here's the money. Pleasure doing business with you." And then he does cartwheels all the way home, knowing that he traded everything he had in life for something worth way more than he ever dreamed possible. And that, says Jesus, is like finding out that you can be part of the kingdom of heaven. When people discover that the God of creation knows them by name and likes them in spite of all the bad they've chosen in life, that he personally sacrificed a great deal to cover for what they've done wrong, when you get that God is waiting with bated breath for you to reconnect with him, that's all he thinks about all the time, that's all he wants, when you get that, when it finally hits you in a way that you can feel its goodness, you are willing to trade anything and everything for the chance to get in with him. It's kind of like being in love. Do you remember that? When that happens, for no good reason, you're willing to trade everything that mattered to you the day before just to be in that person's presence, because a relationship with that person seems worth infinitely more than anything else you've ever had in your life. And when you get that God is offering you the kingdom of heaven, it's the same feeling. You say, yes, thank you, yes. Sign me up on that list. Whatever it takes, I'm in. Yes, please. After a guy I know was baptized into Jesus, he came out of the water smiling. And the first thing he said is, he says, I feel like I've just been let in on the greatest secret in the world. Another man, when he got baptized, came out of the baptistry. And as he was drying himself off, he said, I've got so many people I need to talk to. They need to know, and I can't wait to tell them. One husband and wife got baptized in the middle of the weekday. And we opened up the building so they could come in and do that. After we were done, we were leaving, I was locking up the building, and the husband came back to me from the parking lot, and he said, thank you. And I said, you're welcome. He said, we were wondering, is it appropriate to tip your baptizer? And I said, no, but I really like the way you think. You just feel good when you get it. Jesus is describing the feeling that you get when you win, like a drawing or something. I was at Iron Sharpens Iron yesterday, a big thing hosted by the Greece Assembly of God, the beautiful big building that they have. There were a bunch of guys from our congregation, past and present, who were there. Cool singing. It's a really manly sound when 600 guys are singing to Jesus together. Good teachers all day, a couple very passionate, very interactive preachers. And they have a giveaway every year. They have a bunch of prizes for a bunch of winners. But the best prize is tickets to the Sabres game. And last year, Roberto won those tickets. And he doesn't know how to spell hockey. Because it's always hot in the DR. So he said he had them, and I asked if he was going to use them, and he said no, and he gave them to me. And Jess and I got to go see Eichel play against McDavid last year. So great, great seats. Donated by a guy who loves the Sabres and loves people going to the Inner Iron Sharpens Iron Conference. It was great. So this year, I'm actually there. This is the first time I went. And they say, fill out something online, and you could win Sabres tickets today. And I go, yes. So I filled it out online. And then they said at the next break, there were too many people trying to fill it out online, and they crashed the site, and none of those count. I said, oh, no. And they said, so fill it out again. So I filled it out again online. I said, yes, I really want to win. And I filled out a paper form, too, just in case the site crashed again. And when they announced the winner at the end of the conference, I really wanted to win. And I was waiting on the edge of my pew, and the guy up front says, and the winner of the Sabres tickets is Scott Green. And as soon as I heard him say, I thought, rats, I didn't win. Ah, sorry. The other guy was looking at the paper up front, and he said, wait. Scott Green is not the winner. And the guy who said Scott Green said, what? And they looked at the paper, and they talked about that for a while, and he said, oh, he's right. Scott Green is not the winner. And they looked at the paper again, and they said, the winner is John Walker. John Walker, is he here? And I thought, John Walker. Whoa, I'm John Walker. I win. And I ran up to the front, and I shook everybody's hand, even the people who weren't giving away the prizes. And I said, thank you. I win the Sabres tickets. Yes. And Jesus says that's what it's like to find out that God wants you to be part of his kingdom, only way more. So if it's such a good thing to be in, and Jesus says it is, why don't more people get in? I read an Alex Roxburgh stat this week. He's a guy who does research on churches in America. He says if you were born between 1925 and 1945, there's a 60% chance that you'll be in a church building today. If you were born between 1946 and 1964, there's a 40% chance that you will be in a church building today. If you were born between 1965 and 1983, there's a 20% chance that you will be in a church building today. If you were born after 1984, there's a less than a 10% chance that you will be in a church building today. And we used to think that was because a lot of people just didn't know what is being offered. But that's not right. They all know what we're offering. We used to think if we could just come up with the right formula, the right wording, we could get everybody to follow Jesus. You've heard of the four spiritual laws, the Roman bridge, the Roman road, the bridge illustration. These are ways that we've been taught to present the gospel to people so that they will choose to follow Jesus. But I know a lady whose dad was a preacher. All her life, she was part of a church. And today, she's not part of any church. And I asked her why, and she said, well, we're so busy. And what that translates is what they're offering isn't very high on our priority list. I went to seminary in Cincinnati, Ohio with a guy, and then I moved here to Rochester, and I met that same guy in a restaurant here in Rochester 2 years later. He was managing the restaurant. I said, Alan, when did you get here? He said, oh, about 18 months ago we moved to Rochester. I said, wow, I didn't know that. Nice. What church are you part of? He said, not. I said, not what? He said, we're not part of a church. We just kind of drifted away when we moved and we never went back. How is it the people who could teach others gospel presentations don't buy into the gospel? But see, if we listened to Jesus, we would have been warned about stuff like that. Different parable. Matthew 13, verse 3. Jesus is telling the story. He says, a farmer went out to sow his seed. Verse 4 says, as he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path. The birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil, and it sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root. Other seed, Jesus said, fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop, 160, 30 times what was sown. And then Jesus says, whoever has ears, let them hear. That's just a story about a guy who's throwing seed out all over the place. Some of it fell where there was no soil at all. It fell on barren ground, just rock, and birds came and ate the seed. But then we add some soil to the guy's land, and the plot thickens. The seed springs to life. But the sun burns the seed to death because there's no rootage. And then Jesus says some seed fell in thicker soil and it sprang to life, but the thorns grew up with it and they strangled out the seed. And then some seed, Jesus said, fell on good soil and it sprang to life and it kept growing a lot and it was happy to grow and it made a lot. Then Jesus says that the soils represent the different ways that people respond to the kingdom of heaven. That's what Jesus said was going to happen when we talk about the kingdom of heaven, when we offer people the kingdom of heaven. Even though it's great, this is what's going to happen. And some people read that parable, and they conclude that only about 25% of our efforts are going to result in anything good. 25% of the people that we talk to will say, yeah, baby, that's terrific. I want me some of that. But 75% are going to reject the good news. That's what some people read that story say. But actually, in Jesus' story, 75% of the people respond favorably in the beginning. They hear the good news, and they opt in. It starts growing, and a lot of people respond positively to God's offer in the beginning. But then trouble comes in life, or opposition comes, or people start worrying about stuff, or they get wealthy, and people drift away. What's the difference between a poorly dressed man on a bicycle and a well-dressed man on a tricycle? A tire. What's the difference between someone who trades everything for the treasure and someone who drifts away? See, that's a big question. That's a really important question. That question really matters. Because if we can find the answer, and if we're able to implement an answer, lots more people are going to end up living lots more satisfying lives here and in hereafter. So, to finish out our series on how to help people, what in the world are we doing together? I made up my own parable. I made up a parable for this sermon to help you see and to be the answer. Let's suppose a parable is usually defined as an earthly story with a heavenly meaning, right? Earthly story with a heavenly meaning. It's just a regular story from life, right? Real life. It's not weird. It's just all of Jesus' parables could have really happened. There is no impossible stuff in any of Jesus' parables. He doesn't have cows jumping over the moon. He never talks about a boy whose nose grows every time he lies. There's nothing unrealistic. Like, Jesus would never tell a parable about a good country music song. Because that's not real. Jesus would never include a story about the Bills winning the Super Bowl. Because, come on. But a shepherd who has to chase down a sheep that snuck through a fence, that's in there. A fisherman who sorts out his catch at the end of the day, keeping the trout and tossing the carp, that's in there. A boss who leaves three guys in charge of his business when he goes on vacation, those all are things that could happen. The stories Jesus told as parables are all very realistic scenarios from life. So here's mine. Let's suppose a guy has an older car, say a red 99 Toyota Camry, and the catalytic converter goes, and it starts getting loud, like pretty loud. But let's say his radio still works, so he can turn up the radio and not really hear the problem. Until finally it's so loud that he cannot even hear his radio anymore. So let's suppose this guy drives to Buffalo, hypothetically speaking, so that his brother can replace the catalytic converter. And then let's say that a couple weeks later, his muffler breaks in half, literally in half. And the car is so loud it gives him a headache. And he doesn't want to drive all the way to Buffalo to get this one fixed. So he instead sets up an appointment with Trombley in Canandaigua, and they put on a new muffler, hypothetically speaking. Okay, that's a lot of money so far, but we've taken care of the noise in the front and the back. We're good, right? Let's suppose this guy drives home from Trombley thinking that he's really taking care of business. And let's suppose Earl comes to visit. a friend from Buffalo comes to visit this guy. Maybe to lead singing while Roberto's out of town for a week, hypothetically speaking. And let's suppose that this Buffalo friend listens to the muffler stories of woe, and he says, oh, you should go to Muffler Man. And I say, the guy in the story says, that I'm making up out of thin air, the guy says, what's Muffler Man? And the friend says, oh, it's this shop in Buffalo. And they're fast, and they're good, and they're inexpensive. And you know that he can't be telling the truth because you can't have all those three things at the same time. You can have fast and good, but it's going to cost you a lot. You can have good and inexpensive, but you're going to have to wait for a long time to get it. Or you can have things fast and inexpensive, but they're not going to be worth having. But Earl insists, Muffler Man is all three of those things, and he goes on and on and on about how good they were. They were fast, they fixed his thing, they were inexpensive, they charged him a fifth of what other people said they were going to charge him. It was so good. But it doesn't really matter. You just listen to that story because you have a new catalytic converter and a new muffler, so what could go wrong? Until about a month later, you start to hear this little muffler noise under your car, that little putting, putt thing. And it gets louder and it gets louder and it gets louder. But you've already spent a lot of money already and you don't want to spend any more money. So you just listen to it. But then let's just suppose you're driving through Bloomfield and you stop at the light and you wait for it to turn green and then you head out and you're driving 30 miles per hour like you are supposed to and you suddenly see red and blue lights in your rearview mirror. So you pull over and he walks up and he says, do you know why I pulled you over? And I said, the guy said, I have no idea in the world why you pulled me over. I was going 30. He said, yes, that's true, but your muffler is hanging very low and it's very loud, so I'm going to have to give you a ticket. But you find out in conversation that the trooper is from Cheektowaga and your high school used to play his high school and he played baseball and football and you talk about that for a while and you talk about where it's good to eat over in the Clarence area and you're very polite about it and you have a very nice conversation and he said, okay, I'll be right back. And you're thinking, after all that, he's probably just going to give you a warning. And sure enough, he walks back up and he hands you your license and your ticket. A ticket, a fix-it ticket, but still a ticket. And you drive away thinking, rass and muffler, I hate mufflers. But then you remember what Earl recommended and you decide to give Muffler Man a shot. So you drive over within the 24 hours of the ticket and you drive into the Muffler Man parking lot and before you turn off the car, a guy comes out and he said, we heard you coming. Would you like us to check out your muffler? And you leave the car running and you get out and you go into the waiting room and you go into the bathroom and you come back out to get something to drink and 15 minutes later, you're done. And they say there was a hole in the pipe between the catalytic converter and the muffler. Of course there was. But now it's perfect and it didn't cost that much to fix and they're really nice about it and you tip them and drive home quietly. And then, hypothetically speaking, you go to the court date and the judge makes this big speech about plea bargains and how he's talked to the ADA and you're second in line and the old lady ahead of you gets a 72 and a 55 mile per hour reduced to a parking violation and hypothetically speaking, you tell your judge your name and he looks at the chart and he says, the ADA says if you got it fixed, I'm authorized to let you go. And you shove the receipts up to him And he looks at him and he says, "Have a nice day." He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Okay, I admit my parable is about 7 times as long as any Jesus ever told. But it's my first attempt at parables. And the reason I told it is because we're finishing our series on what on earth we're doing together as a church. And we're thinking about why so many people that we know about Jesus, but they don't choose to follow him. And I think, like the guy in my parable, most people are quite aware that there's something wrong in their lives. I mean, the world news is way too evil to even pay close attention to. And the national news is so depressing, whatever side of the aisle you actually sit on. And marriage is way more work than anybody ever told you about. And parenting is so every day. And work is not satisfying and not very rewarding. And sleep's never enough, even when you get an extra hour. And your extended family's dysfunctional. And your team never wins. And life's hard. And there's something inside you that longs for more. Even when stuff is good, you want more. So you try to patch up the parts that are making the most noise in your life right now, and it seems like that helps for a while, but you know that there are still problems until the day you get pulled over. Your spouse serves you papers. Your company lets you go. Something really serious that cannot be ignored. Your doctor says the C word. Your kid calls from a police station. And suddenly it's more than you can cover up with a loud radio. And here's the part where I think we can find the way that we can help other people get into the kingdom. We need to be the friend who knows and glows about Muffler Man. We need to be the people who have put in a good word for our experiences with Jesus. If we're living lives that are filled with love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control, if they see us live different than anybody else is living because of what Jesus helps us do, if we really like Muffler Man and they know that, then when they need a new muffler, they will be more likely to try Muffler Man. So what do you call a man who always wins? Victor. What do you call a man who always wants his money back? Bill. What do you call a man in denial? Very wet. What do you call a man in a pile of leaves? Russell. What do you call a man who's walked behind a car all day long? Exhausted. And people you know will get exhausted because life without Jesus doesn't work. That's why he offers himself. And when they're ready to be helped, we can help them. Earl was not the guy who fixed my muffler. Muffler Man guy did that. But Earl is the guy who pointed me to the guy who could help me. And because I like Earl, and because I trust Earl, and because he told me his story with such joy, because he was so sure that they could help, I went, and they helped. And the judge let me go free, and he even said, "Have a nice day." Folks, this past week was the first week of Willowbrook's 21st year here as a church in this building. And it was a good week. Last Sunday, we celebrated doing 20 years of life together. Last Tuesday, we got ready to take care of more people who currently don't have a home to live in. Last Thursday, we invited everybody in our community in from the rain. And we showered them with candy and kindness, and we had a great night together. Yesterday, a bunch of guys went to be part of a conference of local churches, and I had a couple of aha moments that will help me do life better with my family and with our church. Yesterday, a bunch of us went to Scio, New York, to hang out with a bunch of other youth groups, and we brought back the Chili Bowl Championship Trophy. We had a really good week. And the reason most Americans are not following Jesus today is because they've never known anyone who really follows Jesus. So they don't even know what church really looks like. But we've had a good week of doing church, and people are watching us. And that's the way we can make the world better. We can't change people's hearts. Only God can do that. But we can live lives that are good, and we can tell people about the one who changed us. I thank you for doing that well this week. Let's do it more.